All right. Thank you. It's 6:30 p.m. I'd like to welcome you to the March 9th, 2021 joint special meeting of the Planning Commission and the Black Diamond City Council. Welcome. May we please do the flag salute? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Clerk Karina, could we please have a roll call?
Yes, Commissioner LeConte.
He's muted.
Commissioner Jensen?
Present.
Commissioner
Present.
Commissioner McCain?
Present.
Commissioner Wheatball?
Present.
Commissioner Amber?
Here.
And Commissioner Olson?
Present.
Council Member Deedy?
Here.
Council Member Oglesby, I believe, is excused. Council Member Wisnowski?
Here.
Council Member Stout?
Here.
Council Member De Leon?
Here.
Council Member O'Donnell?
Here.
And then position 7 is currently vacant. And the mayor's. Yes. Okay.
Karina, did you receive Commissioner LeConte's? He is here.
I did. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
All right. So welcome. It's a great time to meet with both the City Council and the Planning Commission on the very important document that we have before us. So I would go ahead at this point in time and turn this meeting over to Mona Davis, and please lead us through whatever action or information that we need.
Great. Thank you, Chair McCain, and welcome to the mayor and other commissioners and county or city council members. It's nice to see you all tonight, and this is my first workshop, so bear with me. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. So I just wanted to do a quick welcome and introduction, and then I will turn the meeting over shortly to Blue Line to give some additional information. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about our housing action plan tonight and give a brief overview on that. You know, our housing action plan is a really valuable tool to help guide our housing element of the comp plan that we'll be working on for the 2024 comp plan update. And so the goal is to get a good grasp on how the city wants to handle our growth and capacity to better inform the housing element of that comp plan. So our first step was to prepare a housing needs assessment and then draft a housing action plan, which included a public participation component with the housing survey that went out in late January. So just to update you briefly, we received over 130 surveys back, and we're currently in the process of compiling the comments. But we did hear our citizens. You know, we are evaluating those survey comments that express the need to preserve our community character, provide a good balance of housing options for all ages and income levels in our city, improve our transportation infrastructure sooner than later, that was a big comment, and manage our growth more thoughtfully. And that's just to mention a few of the observations that we saw. But Blue Line is here to support the city's efforts in managing our housing growth in a well thought out manner. And I wanted to mention, you know, before I provided introductions, that Blue Line deserves some special kudos and recognition tonight, as the Department of Commerce recently mentioned in their February newsletter that the City of Black Diamond housing needs assessment and housing element evaluation was a really great example for other jurisdictions to look at. And so I thought that was really good news. I also appreciate their assistance in tracking our grant funding through this new process that we're going through. And so with that, I'd like to introduce the Blue Line group that's helping the staff members in Blue Line that are helping us with our housing action plan. And that is Leanne Bryan and Chase Killebrew and Eric Jensen. And they're gonna give us a brief presentation on the housing action plan and the housing needs assessment, how they tie together, as well as give a quick overview of the public participation process. So Lee, I don't know who's starting, Leanne or Eric or Chase, I'm not sure.
I'll go ahead and start. Some of this is going to be a bit of repeat from the Planning Commission meeting that we had about a month ago, I believe. But we just wanted to, you know, start out the evening by giving a brief overview of the project and some contextual information and just kind of where we are in the process, and then kind of go over some of the objectives in general in the draft housing action plan. And then we're gonna turn it over to Mona to lead the discussion. So Chase is going to start out by giving you background on the housing bill that we refer to as HB 1923, and then we'll kind of move into the objectives.
So as Leanne stated, we kind of went over this information in the Planning Commission meeting last month, but again, we just want to talk about it again so the council can hear it, and just to reiterate some of the things that we said. So all of this, you know, began this process because of House Bill 1923, which was passed in the spring of 2019, and then became effective in the summer of 2019. So it encourages cities to create and prioritize the creation or preservation of affordable, inclusive neighborhoods, and to consider the risk of displacement that can be caused by excessive growth. HB 1923 allocated $5 million in grants assistance, and cities could either receive up to $50,000 or $100,000, depending on the population size, with 20,000 people being that threshold number. To receive the funds, cities had to commit to implementing at least two of the eligible actions from a menu of 12, or they could develop a housing action plan. So early last year, at the direction of Barbara Kincaid, you know, the former planning director, we applied for the funding on the city's behalf, and the city received $50,000 to write a housing action plan. The grant is performance-based, and the city must adopt the housing action plan by June 30th of this year to receive the full amount. And now Leanne's gonna discuss a little more about what's included in the housing needs assessment and housing action plan.
So when we first sat down with Barbara Kincaid to discuss the project, she was mostly interested in the housing needs assessment component of the housing action plan. She was in the midst of all the permits coming in from the MPDs and started to become concerned more about the future affordability of Black Diamond with so much rapid growth. So the goal was to capture a snapshot of Black Diamond prior to the build out to better understand the effects of the build out later down the road. So the housing needs assessment primarily uses data up until 2018 to get that kind of pre-MPD snapshot of the community profile, looking at demographics and current housing stock, et cetera. So moving forward, the idea would be to perform the same assessment again, you know, maybe it's up to the city to decide, but maybe every year or so, just to kind of understand the impacts as the build out occurs. So as I discussed in the last meeting, the housing needs assessment has been submitted. However, in order to receive the grant funding, the city still have to adopt the housing action plan in addition to performing the needs assessment. So we're working on the first draft of that housing action plan at this moment. And just, you know, as a reminder, this document shouldn't be interpreted as a charge to go build more housing now. It's more about monitoring the changes that occur and kind of building out that toolbox to reference when the time does come to make policy interventions. So we'll kind of just go give a brief overview of the draft housing action plan. And then, yeah, we'll kind of turn it over to you guys for discussion. So one of the major themes of the draft, as I mentioned before, is monitoring. That's why it's the first objective. There are a ton of residential units coming online right now. So kind of taking a breath and taking the time to monitor as the build out occurs and using data to help better inform policy interventions that may be needed in the future and to kind of thoughtfully address the needs as they arise. It recommends annual monitoring of housing development and demographic data, utilizing the spreadsheets that we created for the housing needs assessment. So that process could be really quick and simple to do each year if the city wanted to. Another recommended action is creating partnerships with neighboring cities and towns, making sure that all the shared interests are identified and prioritized, especially when we're talking about transportation needs. And then the draft also recommends better aligning the city's policy documents. So making sure that when new land use changes are considered that, you know, say the capital facilities plan, plans for the infrastructure that might support that change. And then making sure the comprehensive plan is updated on time. And since Black Diamond is experiencing growth at a rapid rate, maybe consider an annual update to kind of accommodate for that growth. And then one last part of that first strategic objective is making a recommendation to conduct a risk assessment at some point when the timing's right. So this could just provide more information to make really targeted policy interventions to help protect those who are more vulnerable to displacement. And then Chase will talk about the other two objectives.
Yes, so there are two more strategic objectives. The second one is to increase housing diversity and preserve community. So this objective prioritizes preserving the, you know, rural small town feel of Black Diamond, as well as encouraging strategies that will allow existing residents to continue to live in high quality homes that they can afford. It also encourages Black Diamond to increase its housing supply, diversity, and make the development of affordable housing more feasible. So based on our 2018 baseline numbers that are included in that housing needs assessment, the overwhelming majority of the current housing stock in Black Diamond is single family residential. And we know the master plan developments have and will continue to change this makeup, which will, you know, ensure the housing stock can meet the needs of households of varying sizes and incomes. And we believe this trend should continue as this can help reduce the risk of displacement caused by the rising cost of a traditional single family home. We also know there are residents of Black Diamond that want to preserve the city's rural small town feel. So we've encouraged the city to come up with design standards that embody Black Diamond's character to ensure future development blends in with the existing fabric. The third and final strategic objective is to create opportunity. So this objective seeks to guide Black Diamond in addressing how it can leverage rising employment opportunities and increased investment to efficiently reinvest in more funding for infrastructure and more housing opportunities for current and future lower income households. There are many value capture tools available in Washington State, and this objective just encourages the city to consider them when it starts to implement measures to address its housing needs. This objective also suggests the city should not allow people to be left behind or left out of the increased number of housing opportunities that are already available and will continue to become available in the city. So that's, that's the general rundown. I think before we turn it over to Mona, Eric, were you going to talk a little bit?
Thanks, Chase. Yes, I was just going to jump in and remind folks that there'll be ample opportunities for public comment, public participation throughout this process. Obviously, we're at the post-survey stage, but coming forward with the Planning Commission and then on to Council, there'll be public comment periods as part of normal regular meetings. And of course, there'll be a public hearing at some point soon down the road that there'll be testimony be able to be provided. If the city wishes to do any special public meetings beyond tonight, in addition to the regular scheduled meetings, certainly that can be something to be considered. Finally, there'll be work being done in preparation for the yearly comprehensive plan amendment process, which will have its own set of public comments and public hearing efforts as we go toward updating the housing element of the comprehensive plan. So there'll be, as I said, ample opportunity for public input, public feedback, and an opportunity for the community to kind of walk through this process together. Now I'll give it back to Mona. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric and Chase and Leanne. That was really helpful. So before we begin the open discussion around the draft housing action plan, I wanted to provide a bit of clarification on the purpose of tonight's meeting. So I've been involved in numerous meetings with King County around our growth targets and have collaborated with the PSRC and the Department of Commerce on the housing action plan. And from what I am understanding, a successful housing action plan should include a review of our housing policies and regulations, what we have today, and what we should think about implementing in the future. So the housing action plan informs our housing targets, which are primarily being met with the MPDs, which tie into the housing element of our comprehensive plan. So my goal is to work on the housing element of our comp plan later this year. While these documents are fresh in our minds, and then we this could also be then part of our 2024 comp plan update. So in talking with Commerce, the city does need to be thinking about all economic segments and income brackets around housing. And we need to build an affordable, or maybe we don't want to use that word, you know, maybe we would want to say attainable component to our housing element. So we're not looking to increase capacity for housing, particularly tonight, or amend our comprehensive plan as part of this exercise. That is not the point of this evening's meeting. There will be plenty of opportunity, as Eric mentioned, for further public comment as we get into the housing element work and comp plan updates over the course of the next 3 years. It's important to understand that no policy measures are adopted when the housing action plan is adopted. The housing action plan is a guiding document only. So when the time comes to adopt specific policies in the future to meet changing housing needs, there's a roadmap for us to do so. So we really have no agenda tonight other than to get input from both the Planning Commission and the Council on the draft housing action plan and have the Council inform on the decision-making process. So most cities have their Planning Commission review the housing action plan prior to bringing it to the City Council. So we can take the input we received tonight and we can revise the current draft for additional review in another joint workshop, or we can bring tonight's suggested edits directly to the City Council at a future public hearing. That's really up to the City Council to decide this evening how best to go about that. But as a reminder, the Housing Action Plan should be adopted and submitted to Commerce. I've seen a couple different dates floating around. Recently, I saw June 15th. I know Chase just mentioned June 30th. I think there might be a little flexibility around that. But it would be my goal to work through this Housing Action Plan and not let it drag out to where we couldn't ever get to working on the housing element. So with that being said, I'll turn it back over to the chair to guide the open discussion. Chair McCain, I believe you're on mute. Sorry.
No. I'll be a pro by the time we don't do these anymore. Anyhow, so I would like to, open the discussion and perhaps start just with page one, the introduction, and have anybody chime in that sees any glaring details that are perhaps misplaced or misconstrued or they have a question about. So let's go ahead and we'll just address issues on page one. I think the biggest issue that I had with information on page one is that it was the dates of 2026 for full build out of the MPD and 2035 seemed to be a bit of target dates that weren't 100% reachable. I certainly believe that with the 2026 date. Ms. Davis, if you could chime in, is the 2035 date in your estimation a more comprehensive date?
Yes, Chair McCain. I would say that we probably want to put in the 2035 or up to 2044 possible date, but we'll look at that. Clearly, the 2026 date is not correct, so we'll get that corrected.
All right. Any other planning commissioners have any other issues? Please just state your name and go ahead and carry on with your comment thereafter.
This is Commissioner Amber. I'm wondering what it says that 30% of household income being spent on housing is cost burdened. I thought 30 to 35% was normal. And so I'm kind of wondering how, what is cost burden? Because I was clearly under the impression from mortgage bankers that 30% was pretty normal, and that was quite acceptable for housing expense.
And Commissioner McCain, that is conservative, Commissioner Amber, so you're right. So I do believe that in itself is skewing these numbers. Ms. Davis or any of our consultants, do you have any information to counter that or to hold that up, that 30% number?
I'm hoping that Leanne Ryan with Blue Line can help us weigh in on that. I know she got those numbers from, I think, as part of our census. And Leanne, can you help elaborate a little bit on the 30%?
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about affordability and affordable housing, 30% or above 30% is considered cost burden when we are talking about affordability. We can provide some data to back that up and cite it in the document, but that is the standard for what is defined as cost burden is spending more than 30% of your household income on housing.
Commissioner Amber, that would kind of lend me to believe that probably 90% of America is then cost burdened. I mean, because that seems like a pretty, as Commissioner McCain said, that's a pretty conservative lending percentage for home ownership.
And I think that is based on, I'd have to dig for that a little bit, but I think there's something that bases those numbers.
If I may also, this is Councilmember De Leon. I think when we're also talking about the idea of how this might relate to like a mortgage or something like that, I believe that part of what we're talking about is the debt to income ratio. And I think that's still a slightly different measure than overall what it costs just simply to afford housing in addition to all the other expenditures that come along with living. So they do seem to be separate metrics and not one and the same.
I'm not sure I followed that exactly, but
this is Councilmember Wisnowski. I think what Councilmember De Leon is trying to say is there's more to the number than just mortgage, right? So there's utilities and all that kind of stuff that go along with that. Is that how that's calculated for the Blue Line folks? Is it more than just a mortgage number or a rent number? Is it also the added in utilities and things like that?
Chase, do you know if utilities are included in there?
Yes, it's all housing related, hog costs related to housing.
Commissioner Amber again, but I believe that's what mortgage lenders take all of your housing expenses and figure that if you're spending 30 to 40% on housing, that you're not cost burdened. I mean, it seems like that is a pretty low percentage of, 30% going to your housing needs, which includes taxes, insurance, utilities, and mortgage expenses. that seems like it's a pretty common number that would qualify most of America as being cost burdened.
Commissioner McCain, and you're correct, Commissioner Amber, except for the fact it does not include utilities. So it's generally principal, interest, taxes, insurance, and private mortgage insurance. So that's all that a mortgage lender would consider as part of that debt to income ratio. And 30% in this particular region, certainly being on the conservative side. So if we're going to base our decisions on this housing action plan, it seems like we should be using some more relative numbers. In my opinion, I would think that someone is cost burdened. 51% is the lending maximum. So it's a ratio between 30 and 51%. 51% probably is cost burdened. So I think a number somewhat in the middle would be more appropriate to use if we were basing our decisions on the affordability calculation itself.
I was going to make a recommendation that we use a standard benchmark. So perhaps in starting off the introduction saying, according to the National Institute of X, Y, and Z, the, you know, standard is X, and then here is where Black Diamond as a community falls. So that we're not necessarily basing it on, you know, whatever we picked out of the sky, but an actual benchmark established outside of the city of Black Diamond, and then doing a comparison as part of the introduction.
Thank you, Commissioner Weefall. That's a good idea. So I guess...
Commissioner Olson.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, where is the connotation that the word cost burden is negative? Because cost burden is just a matter of fact. It's the burden of cost for housing. So I'm just, where did Commissioner Amber, where did you get it that it was shed as something that's negative?
Well, it sounds negative to me. I mean, they say that cost burdened households, 70% of cost burdened households make less than 80% of the area median income. I mean, it sounds like cost burden sounds like a bad thing.
So I think it's just technology. Maybe somebody can clarify, because if the cost burden of your household was 10%, it would still be the cost burden, but maybe I'm smarter than me would know.
May I jump in real quick just to clarify? So the cost burden data comes directly from the Census Bureau. It's part of the American Community Survey data that it's a nationwide standardized data set. And the 30% is the 30% or more income on housing costs. And so as a result, all housing analysis that is being utilized in the state under this HB 1923 will address or look to this definition, this cost burden. So it is a standardized data set. I'm not saying that it can't be something that can be looked at a little more in terms of customization, but I just want to make sure that everybody's clear that this is a standardized nationwide Census Bureau data set that is defining the cost burden at the 30%. So that's how we've followed the process, as well as a number of other jurisdictions under the same housing analysis.
If I could add, this is Commissioner Weefall. I think what will give this housing report more validity is if you actually cite that source in that particular section to lend that credibility, so that we know, you know, the basis for that data.
It's also important to note that this 30% encompasses renters as well. So that's why we also don't use a mortgage lender baseline, because we are talking about ownership and renting.
So Commissioner McCain, so you're putting the rental information in with the housing mortgage cost information. And Mr. Jensen, I know you said that it's the housing costs. If you could just clarify for us what's all included in housing costs, I think that would help to answer some questions.
Okay, I'd have to go back and make sure I catch all of that definition and forward it on. I don't have it at my disposal at this moment, so I can certainly forward that on after the meeting.
Okay, so perhaps we could just make a note on that page one that we would cite where this information is coming from, and maybe what it totally includes.
This council member Wisnowski. So if that's a national number, right? So that's a blended average across the nation. Do we have a regional number or a metro market number that's a standard used by the state maybe, or by King County? As we all know that, you know, Seattle metro area is one of the top five hottest real estate markets in the country right now. So our numbers are probably going to be a little bit different than Bismarck or, you know, some of those places that would bring, you know, it's an average, right? So you've got us way up here, you got Bismarck way down here. It brings it down a little bit here. We need to figure out what's appropriate for our region and our market, not necessarily the national average.
This is Councilmember De Leon. At least according to the report that we have for this session, it does seem to be comparing King County as a whole and not even just Washington, but King County and especially some of the metro and east side areas. So I think we are comparing a very similar region, but it's a good point to make that we do want to make sure that we're staying within a very comparable region.
All right, good discussion. All right. Any other discussions necessarily on page one? Can we move to the strategic objectives number one form? The pages aren't numbered. Apologize for that.
This is Commissioner Perez. I know when we spoke last week, 10 trails wasn't included on page one. So I think that's something that definitely needs to be added in here.
10 trails is included. We referred to it as the villages by mistake because that's what it was permitted under. So 10 trails is included in all of the numbers.
Perfect.
So I'm sorry, Chairman McCain. So we could go ahead and where we could look for an edit to this information is where specifically? So it has Lawson Hills and the villages mentioned on the second sentence there. So would we rename that 10 Trails Development or would we keep Lawson Hills separate? Ms. Davis, can you chime in on that?
Chair McCain, I want to make sure that we're all going off the same document. I feel like some of us are looking at the housing needs assessment and some of us are looking at the housing action plan. It's really the housing action plan that we need to focus on tonight.
And well, that's the page I'm referring to, page 3 of the housing action plan. It's called strategic objectives number one.
Okay, and I'm not sure that we really need to go through it page by page as opposed to just having some open discussion, you know, where you could point out the areas that maybe you have comments or questions on, or you'd like to see more clarification on. So just Perfect. A thought, because I think it could be difficult to just go through line by line. I'm not sure we're going to get through all that at tonight's meeting, but I think the idea and the objective tonight was to just kind of give some thoughts and comments and, you know, some ideas around things that you might like to see revised in the document. And then we can talk about next steps to look at a revision.
So this is Councilmember De Leon again, just to clarify what page then we are referring to, because I literally interpreted page one to be the start of this document, or at least the start of the written portion. Would it be accurate to be saying then that we are starting page one with page 30 on the PDF document or page 29 of the housing element evaluation, or is there a different page one that we should be referring to?
Well, I was referring to... Go ahead, Chris.
I think it's page 40 of the PDF, at least as I'm looking at it right now. Page 40 of 51 is the Black Diamond Draft Housing Plan front title page, and it starts off with the page 41, which starts off as item one, introduction.
Thank you, Councilperson Wisnowski. All right, so assuming that, and we're at the strategic objective one page, are there any issues with that? Continuing forward through that element.
Well, hang on a second. Commissioner Amber, let's see. It says here in the strategic objective number one that there are no affordable housing units permitted in the MPDs. And I believe that the MPDs section 11, page 107, I think, of the development agreement says that there are supposed to be affordable housing units. They want them in the upper medium income limits. They don't apparently want low income affordable housing in the MPDs. But there are affordable housing requirements in the development agreement, as far as I can see.
If I could, Chair McCain, I just want to mention that, you know, affordable is a pretty broad definition. And so what's affordable to me may not be affordable to you and vice versa. So I don't want to get hung up on what's affordable, because, you know, the development agreements with the MPDs, you know, they have a broad range of housing, and as Oak Point demonstrated in their presentation to you last Thursday, you know, we have all kinds of housing in the MPDs, but I wouldn't say that they went through any type of analysis to determine, you know, where they had to have so many units to meet this market rate housing. So I think that we need to look at that, take a deeper dive on that as we update our housing element and our comp plan. But I think we need to, what we need to be looking at is our objective is, you know, making sure that we have all of those elements of affordability or attainability, that we're recognizing that we need to do that in our comp plan update.
And this is Vice Chair McCain too, and we've had this conversation before that we are not experts on the MPD. The MPD is a real separate entity to itself, and it's very difficult sometimes to sort one out from the other. But the MPD is something that is in place that we can't really alter. But I understand, Commissioner Amber, the affordability, what does that really mean? And that's a question that we're trying to answer.
So Councilmember Deedy here. So I think that, you know, when you look at the MPDs, the 10 Trails area, or used to be called Yarrow Bay, you have a multiple number of smaller homes, larger homes. You've got the apartments coming in. You've got some homes in there with accessory dwellings already put in, and then you're going to get a senior housing. It's not going to be like Shag or anything like that. It's going to be senior housing where people that can't afford it, seniors that can't afford it, will move in. I think for, you know, for when we look at our R4 and R6 zoning and other zoning in the city, once we pass this plan, then we can look at, you know, incentives for more accessory dwellings, which will be more affordable for families or single couples or single people. And then you can have, like they stated in the document, your cottage style homes, your duplexes, your triplexes, apartments, you know, all those things that the city can look at to see how we can be able to bring a diverse amount of people into our city without having everybody have to be able to afford a $600,000 to $700,000 home. And then, you know, and on top of that, affordable housing is to keep our people that are here and not price them out. And how is the city gonna you know, figure out how we're gonna do that with some incentives, or, you know, how we're gonna help our seniors not get taxed out? So I think, you know, from my reading of the plan, it looked good. I think that it'll be good to move this to the council. And then once we get that passed, then we can digest and work through all the other issues. And I think that what Mona stated, you know, if each person took the time and, you know, after you read this and you made your highlights, whatever, just be able to make those comments tonight. And I think the process will go pretty quick and everybody will understand where everybody's coming from. And then you guys can get back to your business on this at your next meeting. And then hopefully bring it to the council. It seems like we have until June, at least, you know, wrap it up in May, you know, or the beginning of June and get it passed. So that's my comment.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that, Councilperson Beattie.
I'll just jump in and speak here for a moment. This is Councilmember Stout. As I read through this, a few things jumped out at me that I have questions about, and I'm hoping that the Blue Line staff can either clarify or just take note of some things here. You already discussed the build out by 2026, which I'm pretty sure we're not going to have 6,000 houses by within the next 5 years. One thing mentioned, tax exemptions for multifamily dwellings. And I'm wondering how giving tax exemptions would affect the overall city budget, just in general. And there's a section that I'll quote here, zoning changes, bonus densities, height and bulk increases, parking reductions, other regulatory changes and incentives. So those are, you know, they're talking about, it sounds like packing more people into smaller spaces. And I realize that that brings down the cost of housing, but for example, less parking with more people, that just seems like that just doesn't make sense. It seems like you have more people and you need more parking, especially when we do not have a good transit system here in Black Diamond. If you're going to go to work, you're going to have a car. So that just didn't make any sense to me. Job creation and transportation is another quotation. We need aggressive economic development. We can't just keep hovering around and waiting and hoping that somebody else will do something. We need to be aggressive with economic development in the city. And then there's some discussion of tax increment financing, which I'm just beginning to learn about, but it talks about capturing tax dollars to fund public improvements that support commercial development. And my question is, what are those public improvements? What tax dollars will be accessed? And what about that tax waiver we were discussing? You know, now we're going to be accessing more tax money, but we're going to be collecting less tax money. So this all just is a few red flags that popped out for me as I read through this. And I just, my last point was, there's the big discussion about affordable housing. And I think sometimes people think that means low income housing, but I think those are two very different definitions. Affordable is one thing and low income or subsidized is another thing. So those are all my question marks as I read through. And I'm hoping that Blue Line staff can address some of those things, but maybe not all tonight in this meeting.
Thank you, Councilperson Stout. Chairman McCain here, and I think that it's important, and I notice under strategic objectives number two, we have to have affordable housing for our first responders, teachers, nurses. And I think that a big component to wealth building is to have properties that are that you can own. Increasing our rental stock to accommodate affordable rental stock is one thing, but what's really lacking, I think, is to build the kind of properties that people can own, because at least they'll have a toehold in an equity position so that they can move forward and do something different with the city. So, you know, I hate to, and from my professional opinion, condominiums are the way to go. It's less land per unit, but people can actually build wealth because they can own those types of properties. So that would be my opinion on that. Owning versus renting, definitely a plus. From tax, the tax advantages on the federal side, is very important. You know, one of the things that I researched was the recent decision that was made, the Supreme Court decision. It's Martin versus Boise and the city of Boise. And in 2019, the Supreme Court said that we homeless people cannot be punished for sleeping in public places if the entity, if the city, has not provided any low income or affordable income property. So although it doesn't seem to be the biggest worry that we have in the city of Black Diamond, I think it's important to keep our head in the game, because we have certainly seen how homelessness has affected other communities, and that we need to be ahead of that, because there's nothing that we can do to prohibit homelessness in public places per the Supreme Court and that Boise versus Martin decision. All right, if we move on, has anybody got any other either general conversation pieces that they would like to add, or any specific issues?
Councilmember Wisnowski here. Strategic objective number 3 talks about creating opportunity. And one of the things it talks about is creating opportunity for people to live and work in the same community. And I think that if we can look at some of that kind of multi-use housing that seems to be becoming pretty popular around the Seattle area, right? They've been a bunch of redevelopments where they've taken either commercial properties or strictly office properties and redevelop them so that they provide a little bit of retail, a little bit of office, and a little bit of residential. That helps people not have to worry about how are they going to commute, especially here in Black Diamond, when we don't have public transport that's really supporting a. You know, I took public transport for a while here into Bellevue, and it was a struggle because we don't have a lot of buses that come out here and stuff like that. So I think one of the things that, you know, the Planning Commission and the Council can look forward is how we can attract corporations and how we can attract jobs to Black Diamond, right? So we're not just a bedroom community, and so that people can live and work in the community, the same community, and that helps kind of buffer that cost difference a little bit, right? So
yeah, good point. Thank you, Councilperson Wisnowski. I know that we have over 1 million square feet of retail and office space available in the city of Black Diamond. I think that it provides some good opportunities for that. And I would look forward to having some of that property built out so that we could keep more people in the community and lessen the traffic burden that we have as a region on everyone who's commuting in either to the east side or to downtown Seattle.
And I think to all those points as well, this is Councilmember De Leon. I am curious to hear, kind of going off of what Councilmember Stout said earlier about any questions that we might be able to hear tonight while Blue Line is here. And I am also curious about what we might be looking at for answers of it. I have very similar questions. The only thing I would add before hopefully opening that up so that we can hear a little bit more from Blue Line on that is that same piece actually on the Action Point 2.3 about similar concerns about the idea of about waiving the fees as part of that. I'd be curious to see what that would be looking like, especially if we are currently growing and having a lot of our growth based on a lot of fees as it is right now, what that would be looking like for our short-term growth. I do agree also with the idea of attracting some commercial spaces. I would just open up the possibility that while we are growing, and because one of the other line items mentioned earlier was on partnerships with the county and with the state, what it would be looking like to also attract additional transportation options, because not everyone will be choosing then to just work in Black Diamond who's living in Black Diamond. We can't have a say over who's working where and who's living in what kind of housing, but we can provide more options. So I would be hoping that we can also explore what it would look like for things like a ride share, the van pools, et cetera, and also expanding more of the transit lines, because there are going to be more people as they're moving in who'll be looking for that. With that same kind of interest, I hear that there's an interest in, you know, building equity and building wealth as a result of owning a home. Not everyone will be at that place in their lives, but they will be choosing to live in Black Diamond. And I don't want to necessarily preclude a choice for residents or future residents to only have inventory of only, you know, for purchase property, when there could be a whole plethora of reasons why people would be choosing to rent instead. So those would just be my three additional things to add. But I am curious also to hear what the Blue Line folks here tonight might be also adding in as questions.
Yeah, hey, before we get back, go into that, I'd like to just take an opportunity to say a couple things. First of all, this is my first time meeting a lot of the Planning Commission people. So I think this is great that we can get together and talk. And thank you for your service. And I know you guys are doing a lot of great work. So thank you very much. Also to Director Davis, thank you for clarifying the difference between the needs assessment and the Housing Action Plan, because I had a long list of, this is really good stuff in the needs assessment, but it wasn't an action plan. and going through the action plan, it really is a pretty good document. I'm impressed. I think there's some fine tuning that can happen. I'd like to be able to see the needs assessment and the action plan kind of bridge together a bit. And some of the, if you look on some of the pages on the needs assessment, it talks about the goals and policies, outcomes and factors and suggestions, and how are those tied to the action plan. It's the goals and policies. It's not really addressing what is the problem we're trying to solve that creates that goal. So it would be nice to see how that builds the story that then takes you to an action plan that develops the actions and where we're at with the action plan. But I think some of that is just some of the fine tuning and bringing it, all of those really good documents together. So it's a cohesive package. A couple points on the action plan. There's a lot of reference to Washington State information and looking at the bigger picture regionally. That's all good if it tells a story about, therefore we should do this in Black Diamond, or it helps to tell the story about some action plan about the city. I think that would be great to be able to bring that together. The other is the sense of community. You don't see that until it gets towards I think page 48 of whatever, 53, something like that. We are still the small town culture, and we want to make sure we preserve that. And what are we actually doing, you know? And I'd like to see that concept develop a little bit more than just maybe two or three paragraphs, but we really dive into what does that mean and how do we implement that and keep that small town culture feel, you know, so that, hey, I know Joe over here, and, you know, even if it's within the neighborhoods and the neighborhoods know each other, or, you know, what is that? How does that look 10, 15 years from now? The other key part of it, and I know that this is a housing action plan, I like to call it a home action plan. If it's, we're really trying to create a sense of home, right? And maybe that's a little too cheesy, but the more we can think about that, this is where we live. This is where we grow, we raise our children. You know, this is a place we call home. And so what can we do to create a sense of place, a sense of home, and really build on that so we have a strong community? So if we're just doing this housing action plan so we can get to some other deliverable, let's really try to turn it into something that creates a sense of home. The other part of that is that I know that this is a housing action plan, but it also Council Member Wisdowski and De Leon had mentioned, we really need to look at what are the other amenities that support a positive housing environment where people want to purchase a house and live here because they know that there's going to be the amenities that make up the greater part of a neighborhood. So those are some of my thoughts, but overall, I think it's a really good plan. It's coming together, and thank you for all your leadership and hard work on all this.
Thank you, Councilperson O'Donnell. Nice to meet you too. So as we move further into this housing action plan, a couple of things that I really liked, and this is Commissioner McCain, is the stock approvals. I think that's a really great idea for our planning departments to move toward floor plans that can be considered stock approvals. It certainly seems like it can cut down on the administrative burden that processing all of these application permits that they've had. It would really help make the city move through that process more efficiently. And I think something else that we could consider perhaps is we have a three-story height restriction in the city of Black Diamond, that perhaps we could look to something greater than that, to four or five. I know that in an area near Green River College, they have some commercial on the main level and a five-story building on top, which of course, you know, density is an issue, but we're trying to set aside the property to be more affordable, that perhaps we could look at height increases in the future.
So Councilmember Beattie, mm-hmm. I think that we had the three height with conversations with the fire department mm-hmm. on what they can manage, and also what our budget, since we contract with Mountain View, on what we can afford to purchase to fight fires in a building that's much higher than the three story. And as far as, you know, I've heard mentioned incentives, you know, like the stock design for people with accessory dwellings, they just come in, look at that stock design, and then choose that, and then that is a cost savings for the person doing that. And then it also speeds up the permitting process. I think that's a great idea. And all the incentives that I read in here are just that recommendations or starting point. And that would be after we passed this plan, then the council or the planning commission could look at what would be best and how that would benefit the city, and would it benefit the city and the residents, you know, who want to build these dwellings. So I look at that as just as suggestions, and then, you know, whether you form an ad hoc committee or a committee group with the council or work studies or the planning commission takes a run on that, I think that's where those would come into. I'm not sure if Blue Line needs to address those, because those are within house and those are something that we can dig into. I think if Blue Line did address them, I think it would take a while for them to explain each option and go into depth of why they work in other cities and stuff. But I think at this point, I wouldn't say that they need to do that. That's something that we can definitely dig into and research and see what works best for us on incentives.
Good point, Councilperson Beattie. I would not be a fan. I know that it talks about in the 2.3 element about reducing fees. I think that we really have to be careful with that. I think I'd be more of a proponent of development incentives rather than the city waiving fees for processing this paperwork. I mean, we have to be realistic and understand that somehow, some way, we have to pay to sustain the city. So perhaps we could take a look at that in the future.
If I could just really quick, this is Mona Davis, Community Development Director. I just want to mention that you guys are coming up with great ideas, and remember that some of these will be great to implement as new policies as part of our housing element to help guide us into maybe changing our development regulations after that, around how we incorporate some of your ideas into the development codes and our design guidelines and things. So, you know, having this kind of information in our housing action plan is really great at guiding us into the next step of updating our housing element to incorporate some of these goals and policies in there.
Good. Thank you, Ms. Davis. Any other planning commissioners have anything else that they would like to chime in on?
I think our city attorney also has a point or a question to raise as well.
Thank you, Councilmember De Leon. Commissioner McCain, if I can address just a couple of the comments or questions that have come up.
Please.
I'll try and take them in reverse order. I know there's some interest in having pre-approved plans to help speed along and make the approval process for building permits more efficient. We actually implemented something like that called our registered plan program a couple of years ago. I worked with Andy, Mr. Williamson, to develop we call it our registered plans program, where builders can come in and get that pre-approval so that it does make the process of building multiple similar units much faster, more efficient for everybody. So we that's something we do have in place, which is really nice to have. And according to the esteemed Mr. Williamson, the plan has, that registered plans program has worked really well. So, sure. On the question of affordable housing in 10 trails or in the MPDs, it's perhaps a subject of a little bit of misunderstanding or confusion. The development agreement for the two MPDs does contain a provision that discusses affordable housing. That provision is specifically characterized, though, as setting targets, not requirements. So it doesn't really guarantee any specific number or amount or type of affordable housing. And indeed, even as I think maybe Councilmember Stout mentioned that, you know, the definition of affordable is somewhat of a fuzzy concept. You know, there is affordable housing that complies with the housing affordability requirements, you know, if you're going to participate in ARCH or, you know, one of the reasonable regional affordable housing coalitions. That's not necessarily what affordable housing would mean to someone else or in a different context. And I think in our development agreement, the developer is required at the completion of each of the phases of the master plan development to do an analysis. And that analysis includes an analysis of the affordability of the housing that has been created so that it can guide future development in the next phase or in ongoing phases. But again, it's sort of targets, not requirements for that affordable housing. And so the idea, I think, as Mona said, this housing action plan can really kind of solidify some overarching items that the city feels are important, and then those can be reduced to more specific policies as the land use, as the housing element of the comp plan is revised. And then also through our development regulations, where we may create more specific requirements or regulations that implement any updates to the comp plan. And I think that was all I had on my comment list.
Thank you, Mr. Linehan. Good comments. I would ask if anybody else has anything that they would like to be heard on, any other issues perhaps that they would want to have considered by either Blue Line or Ms. Davis. Oh, Christina?
This is Councilmember Wisnowski. So these are kind of related, but related topics on size. So as we look at, you know, trends in housing, there had been a starting of a trend for smaller homes, right? Tiny houses were getting really popular for older folks who may want smaller responsibility, less responsibilities, or younger folks who hadn't started a family yet who wanted less responsibilities. And there's been places that have been modeling these smaller communities, right? Little neighborhoods full of smaller houses, not necessarily on tiny lots, so you don't have huge density, but and now we're kind of trying to figure out just the opposite of that, right? Because now with telecommuting, the trend has become a little bit to be on bigger homes to have a home office in them, right? So we're gonna have to find a good mix of that, right? So we're gonna need to not only support those folks who want a bigger house because they want a home office in the house, but we wanna support a good diversity of people wherever they are in their life cycle, right? So in other words, maybe young folks, older folks, single folks. So for some, a smaller a home may look at that. So that's an opportunity for us to look at do we have any regulations around minimum square footage and stuff like that that we might be able to amend so that we can allow for smaller homes. But then also, how do we attract some of those folks that do want a bigger house because they're going to be working from home, right? most of us, a lot of us have worked from home for the last year, and we all realize that maybe the dining room table's not the best place, right? You can see all my coworkers during the day in my conference calls, right? We've got folks that you're either in a home office or in a dining room or in a bedroom somewhere. And I think we'll have to kind of be creative there because it's kind of unfound territory, right? It's kind of a new reality for us. We don't really know what's going to happen when the vaccine gets through and companies start opening back up. There are a lot of companies who have come to the realization that corporate real estate's pretty expensive. And if they've had everybody working from home for a year, maybe they can alter some of that, right? So that they don't have to bring people back to campus or back to the office, right? I know there's a handful of companies that I've been talking to my friends about that they're all thinking about, you know, what does the future look like for them as their commercial space shrinks and how do they support that telecommute? And to that piece, there's the infrastructure that needs to support that, right? So you look at Ten Trails, they've got a lot of bandwidth over there, but not the rest of Black Diamond all have that. So how can we make sure that we can work with the infrastructure providers to make sure that, you know, the Comcasts of the world and AT&Ts of the world bump up those pipes, right? So that, you know, if we get five people on the block all working from home and doing video conferencing, that they can all do that, right? So I think that what I'm saying is there's whole ramifications that kind of go out from kind of the changing model. And as we look to try to make, you know, neighborhoods and people know their neighbors and a great diversity of people and homes and lifestyles, we need to figure out all of those proliferary pieces that support that. So.
Great. Councilperson Wisnowski. Sorry. I think one of the issues too is homeschool. You know, there are a lot of people that have to have room for homeschooling now, and that's interesting. I am really proud of the city of Black Diamond. We have probably one of the most aggressive ADU policies in the region. We do have a maximum ADU square footage of 1,000 square feet. Most small cities are traditionally limited to 50% of the main residents. I think we would really benefit from doing a better job at advocating our ADU policy with the people who live in the city currently and helping that bridge that affordable housing gap a little bit more too. So, all right, is there anything anybody else would like to discuss that is relative to the housing action plan?
Yes, I have a few other things to add. This is Councilmember De Leon again. I want to circle back a little bit. Also, just thanks to David for clarifying a little bit more on the registered plan program. I think that's going to be an important thing that we continue to sort of fine tune and look at, especially as the nature of what we're building changes. But it's good to know that this is already something that, you know, was highlighted tonight as a current thing that's on our docket. One thing to just go back to on a little bit related to the idea of possibly also incentivizing as a part of future growth, it would be important to sort of really look at what it would mean to be incentivizing people to come into the city, because already this is a really hot market, at least until if there's some sort of a housing bust like there was 10 years ago, there's already a high desire to build here. So it is going to be a matter of if we are ever going to be incentivizing, to what end, and how are we going to be strategic about it? Because we're already in such high competition. With that in relation, I am curious to see if there can be more said about a future housing plan, about what, maybe that's an incentive, maybe that's another program or other kind of parameter for future growth, but what will it look like to also incentivize future technology, and especially related to more sustainable energy and green technology and things like that, especially because we as we're building forward, we want to be making sure that we're building not on finite resources, but on things that can actually help literally generate more electricity and possibly or other energy and also more revenue for our city as well. So I think it would be a really good look to make sure that any future infrastructure really is going to be more forward thinking, especially as how we're building either those buildings or future commercial spaces or things of that nature as well. I think this is something also just to put a pin on for future discussions around future code. I know that Councilmember Didi said something about the current limit on the stories of the buildings that we have in Black Diamond, limiting it to 3 stories. I would be open to exploring that kind of conversation, what it would be looking like to build up. That is a very sustainable model for also making sure that we have more affordable and accessible housing inventory. What that would mean in terms of the fire department, we don't know yet, because that's something that we're in the middle of deciding as a city. We're in the midst of determining who our future fire department will be. It might remain the same. We might contract something differently. So I think that is something for us as a city to be determining as we're planning for that future, is what is this going, maybe that's going to be something that we factor in as we're making that decision for the fire department. I would hate for our growth to be limited to the size of a fire truck, or a fire ladder. So that is something that we need to be considering as well. But those are some of my other big points that I would just accentuate, is what we can really do, especially in the future of future energy sources and building according to that, similar to the technology infrastructure, and then also on the sizing, especially scaling up to size, what that would look like. That does go back into what our plans will be for future transportation options.
Good point, Commissioner De Leon. I would like to add one more thing too. I think that the report talked a little bit about changes in zoning. The R4 zoning designation is really not very applicable within the city limits of Black Diamond. That's 4 lots per acre. And it's very difficult to achieve that. And just from a market perspective, I can tell you, even though a lot of us love our big yards and we love to garden and we love that space, that is not necessarily the desire of our contemporaries. They are more interested in efficiency rather than having a lot of extra area around their own home personally to maintain. And I think that we should really look at that R4 zoning designation and see if it really is appropriate or not. I would certainly love to hear anybody else's comments. I think this meeting has been really productive and I've appreciated everybody's input. Does anybody else have any final thoughts?
Commissioner Amber, I've got some thoughts. It says in the Housing Action Plan several times about preserving the small town character of Black Diamond and what that would look like. I would like to see something like, instead of just rows of blocks of similar houses, a mix of housing like in Morganville and Lower Lawson. That's kind of that's what I envision as a small town rural feel, where you've got little cottages, one-story ramblers, two-story houses, split-level houses, all mixed together. That creates a variety of people from different facets of life that get to mingle together and become neighbors. And I think that creates a much better small-town vibe than just blocks of similar housing. That's my thought on keeping the rural small town feel and building housing construction going forward.
Good point, Commissioner Amber. Would anyone else like to chime in on any other recommendations or any other thing that really piques their interest that we could certainly ask Blue Line for their help with?
I think Bona Davis may have had a question or comment too to add.
Thank you, Councilmember De Leon. I just wanted to mention, you know, these are great ideas and certainly these are great, great policies and goals to make in our housing element. And there's a lot we can do with our development regulations around modifying our setbacks, our building heights,
are types of housing, you know, cottage housing, maybe in the R4 zone, clustering some of those lots and creating more open space around them, or creating community gardens and things like that. Like, there's all kinds of great possibilities we can do in our different zones. And obviously we need to go back and look at our zoning map, you know, our comp plan map and our zoning map. They're not matching right now. And we need to probably go back and revisit that and look at, you know, where are we allowing mixed use housing? And maybe, you know, maybe we need to think about residential, you know, where our transit is right now, and not pushing residential out, you know, for mixed use or multifamily out to places where they don't have the ability to catch, you know, transit. So those are ongoing discussions that we're going to continue to have this year. You know, we've received quite a few suggestions in our docket this year around that. And so those conversations will be continuing. I think the idea here is to just get those ideas down in our housing action plan to guide us into updating our housing element in our comp plan and getting those policies and goals outlined in that, to then further bring our development regulations full circle to make that happen.
Well, that's a great point. Go ahead, Councilperson De Leon.
Thank you. Yeah, and to that end too, I think that does touch on a little bit about what does it mean for the future character of the city of Black Diamond. There is ultimately going to be change. We're not the city of 1921, we're the city of 2021. It's probably going to change, but I think what I hear in that is, where can we still keep that sense of community going? And there will be parts that I think are, you know, we can certainly zone appropriate for. And I appreciate the points that Mona Davis, that you just made about what that might look like in terms of like that mixed use or that walkability level, because that will do a great number on making sure that we do have that sense of cohesion. From what I currently understand, cities that have planned that have tended to have a better sense of community spirit to it. Some parts we may not be able to legislate as easily. It is going to be a matter of, you know, personal nature. And I think also there might be parts to that that will be for future conversation about what do we look like going forward with things around parks and planning, and even on our sensitive areas and our wetlands and our green spaces, which I did hear a little bit about tonight. And I do know was mentioned a little bit in the report, but that will be something that we continue to look at as well, is how do we also build around those green spaces? Because as we know, a lot of the green spaces that are in urban areas also do a lot to improve the mental health of our communities, and do a lot also for the physical health of our communities, and do bring a lot of, not as easily, I'd say, quantified always values in addition to those, but that would be something that we also make sure that we're deliberately continuing to set forth. I know we've been doing that, like, especially in our MPDs, but what do we do that also with the future growth and the future development projects? There were a few other points, but that's at least, one of the other things, that's where I was originally thinking as well, is earlier in those documents, I do know that we were talking about some programs and policies we could be doing with partnership of the cities and with the county. I know that was also brought up just in person, virtually, in the session. But I would be curious to explore what that looks like for Black Diamond, because it is going to look different for Black Diamond than it would for, you know, the city of Kent or Auburn or Renton. But what does that look like to be working in partnership in these kinds of cities with this kind of guideline or growth goal in mind?
Council Member De Leon, are you referring to like the ARCH programs and that type of thing?
Correct. Things like that, because I know that there are a few ideas in there where they're recommending that we partner more when it comes to how we increase accessibility, how we make for more universal design, but also how do we implement policies and programs for things like the ARCH programs, or, you know, for especially transitional housing, or for affordable housing for seniors, or what have you with that. But it will look different. So I am curious to see more of maybe what those specifics would look like for a city like ours.
And this is Mona Davis again. We can certainly look into that. I did have a conversation with Commerce around that. And they said, honestly, it's really hard for small cities to compete in ARCH. It's much easier for the larger metropolitan cities that have lots of transit orientation around them to be able to pay into that. So they really encourage small cities like ours to just really work on having good planning and good policy around making affordability happen in our city. So
thank you.
This is David Linehan, the city attorney. If I can just tack on a little bit to what Ms. Davis was saying earlier about all the great input from tonight. I think the ultimate objective to bear in mind is that the Housing Action Plan establishes three strategic objectives and then a few sub-objectives. We need to make sure that the council, which will ultimately adopt the action plan, is on board, that these are the three key objectives. And so really the goal for this exercise is to establish what are those three key objectives. I mean, there's been a lot of good discussion about some of the details and things we want to see done in the city. Those are great things to keep in mind. Ultimately, we need to have a plan that establishes what those objectives are so that then when we move to the next step of implementing those objectives into the housing element of the comp plan, everybody knows what they're aiming for. So the action plan here is to kind of establish what those high level objectives are that can then be implemented more concretely through comp plan amendments and then ultimately development regulations. So I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that really what we're trying to get at here through this exercise is to confirm or modify that these are the three key objectives, or if these are the wrong objectives, let's figure out what the real objectives are. Because ultimately the council will have to adopt a document that establishes what the objectives are. So really, I think the more that the Planning Commission can help with, and this has been a great exercise tonight, I'm not sure how much more the council is going to want and to need, but there's certainly, I think it's really helpful to get this broader input of ideas and objectives before the council has to really vote on something. So, and I'll leave it to the council how much more back and forth, whether it's another joint meeting or other meetings in the future before they're ready to take this under consideration and actually vote in order to meet the June deadline that we're under for our grant.
Councilmember Deedy, just to go back to what the objectives are, was monitoring housing needs, increase housing diversity, and prevent displacement, or preserve community and create opportunity. Just for anybody who's listening, will be listening to this audio or who is tuning in now and doesn't have these documents, so they know what those three objectives are.
Thank you, Councilperson Deedy. It was really important. I think, we live amongst a really great example. The senior housing here in Black Diamond is awesome. I'm very excited that they're going to be adding 12 or 15 new units to that. But I think that is a great place where we can start. That's a great illustration of how the county can work with seniors and people that are marginalized based on income, how that process works. And it's a gem. And I think we're really lucky to have that here because we can base a lot of other projects that we might jump off with using that basic objective, because it really does work and people are really happy to live there. The other thing is the county has built in a couple of new issues for seniors. The senior tax exemption, that goes up to $58,000 a year now. So anybody who's living in King County who has an income of less than $58,000 does qualify for about, 40% reduction on their real estate property taxes. So that is a great move in the right direction to keep people here in Black Diamond and not having to force them to move to other places that are going to be less expensive for them to live in. So I think we have some great assets here that we can build on.
Chair McCain, I just want to jump in and say I'm really appreciative of your knowledge around the real estate where you can help kind of guide us through this and provide this information, because I hadn't even thought about that element of you having that real estate background. So that's been super helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Would anyone else like to mention anything else? I think it's been a great discussion. I feel like everybody's had a chance to be heard. And if you haven't, please come online now. We'd be happy to entertain your comments.
Commissioner Olson, so in terms of the Planning Commission and Commission, what would be the next steps you need from us?
And Ms. Davis, maybe you can address that for us.
Well, at this point, I would like to get direction from the City Council on how we should go about getting this to you. Do you want us to run it through the Planning Commission again? Do you want us to have, you know, just bring back another draft and do another work session? That's the kind of feedback I'm looking for.
Councilmember DeLeon, I'd be fine to have this go to a work session, but that's me personally.
Mm-hmm. Councilperson Deedy?
I think that it would be good to, one, it could go back to the Planning Commission and then get voted out of the Planning Commission to move to the Council. And I think once it does that, then comes before the Council, and then we can have a public hearing if that's needed, and then move to vote on the draft for housing action plan.
Thank you, Councilperson Deedy. Is Mayor Benson still online? Do you have anything to add?
You're muted, Mayor.
No.
I think that it would be up to the council, but I think that we just need to maybe have comments by the planning commissioners, maybe not even necessarily another meeting, but to turn comments in to Mona, and then she can bring the plan to the council so that they can have their public hearings and deliberate about it so that we can get it done by June.
Perfect. Thank you for your input. I think planning commissioners, I can speak for the planning commission side, that I think we've all had an opportunity to be heard, and I think that would be a great plan to go ahead and just have the adjustments made based on the comments that we've received tonight, and take it over to the council for their final deliberation.
And Councilmember Deedy, I think that what the mayor just stated is the best route to do, and that gets it onto our plate rather quickly, and then we can move forward with getting this on the docket so we can move forward and get a good plan made for the residents of Black Diamond.
Thank you, Councilperson Deedy. I would thank you for your participation, everyone. At this point in time, unless Ms. Davis, do you have anything else to add in closing?
Well, I did want to make mention really quick that the Department of Commerce will be releasing a guidance for updating the housing element in early March, and so they're going to have some information on their website if they don't already. I haven't had a chance to check this week, but also the MRSC and the Department of Commerce are holding a free webinar on March 25th. Around the housing element and how to update that. And so I've already registered for that. If you're interested in it, please shoot me an email and I'll send you the link, or you can get on the Department of Commerce's website. I think it'd be pretty informative. It's on March 25th from 1 to 2:30.
Commissioner McCain, this would be, I would ask that perhaps Karina could send us an email invitation to that meeting, or an email reminder. So perhaps with a link that we could link on if we would wish to. Is there a fee for that meeting?
No, it's a free webinar.
Oh, cool. If that could be handled internally, I think that would be a great idea.
Okay. Maybe we can put it in the minutes. Well, no, maybe not. That won't be. We'll work on that.
All right. Well, great.
So I would like to just, if it would be okay before we conclude, I would like to kind of go over a timeline so I have it. So we're all in agreement. It would be helpful for me to know if we're not taking this back to the Planning Commission, when the council would like me to bring it to their meeting.
Councilmember Beattie, I think the, so what we're in, March right now, I would think that we're pretty busy. So let's say the end of April or the 1st of May would be good.
Mona, when do you have your planning committee meetings with council members?
My next one will be on March 18th. So usually the third Thursday of each month.
So I'm wondering if maybe with that small group of the council, you can go through the little, not little, but the comments and potential updates, and then work through that, and then take it to probably not the first council meeting in April, but maybe the second. Is that what you just said, Councilmember Deedy?
Yes. Yeah.
And Councilmember Deedy, you're on that committee, aren't you?
Yes.
That seems like a good timeline to me. So the committee can work through that with you, Director Davis, and then that committee can send it to the full council.
We do have a council work session scheduled for April 8th. That might be a good time to look at it. If the committee looks at it for the April 1st meeting, that would give a week to get it to the council for a work session. And I don't remember I don't see Brenda on here. Maybe Mayor Benson might remember if we have anything currently for that agenda on the 8th.
Karina's here.
Karina's here, okay. Oh, there she is.
Give me 1 second, I'm looking.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, which date?
April 8th work session. Do we currently have anything on that schedule?
Let's see.
Is that the town hall?
No, town hall's this week, right?
I believe that got moved, but I do wonder if that's an ambitious timeline with the fact that we might be compiling a lot of additional input and then also having the committee meeting and then taking it back. It's a quick turnaround, or it potentially might be.
Okay, the April 8th work session, there's three items on the agenda so far. There's long-term facility planning, marijuana, and social media policy.
Yeah, so maybe that's a good idea to move it to the May work session, which would be the second week in May, right?
Yeah, I think that's good because we have a pretty big schedule in April.
Yeah.
Also, with that in mind, I'm wondering what it would look like to get more public input if that were something that, I know that's something we brought up earlier, but where that might fit in with the timeline as well is if there is going to be more opportunities for public comment or questions or what have you.
Mona Davis here, Community Development. So if we brought this to the work session in May, I mean, we would like to incorporate some of the survey results that we received on the Housing Action Plan. We would like to incorporate those into this document. And then there usually is an opportunity for more public input at the council meeting, whether we have a hearing or a meeting.
Mona, this is Karina. Currently May 13th work session, there is nothing on the agenda for right now.
Okay, maybe we can just go ahead and pencil that in, and I'll confirm that with Blue Line to make sure we can get this revised and with my planning committee to make sure that we can, you know, that time works.
And this is City Attorney Linehan. Just on that timeline question, if there were a work study session early in May, the council could either hold a public hearing in connection with that, if it was noticed that way, or council could do its work that night and then have a public meeting before adoption at the second meeting in May. I think, in order to take full account of the public comment, you'd probably want to get that hearing sooner so that any additional changes could be directed by the council before it actually comes for a vote. So
Councilmember Deedy, so it would be nice to have public hearing with the work session and then at the next meeting vote on it so that there's plenty of time for public comment and we're not trying to rush after getting public comment and then trying to add or anything and then take a vote. So public hearing, work session, and then the next meeting, have it on the docket to hopefully pass.
Mona Davis here. My only concern with that is I'm not sure I'm going to have time to make the, to get the, that in the packet material. I mean, that's only a week apart. So if we decide to do a public hearing in on May 13th, or even at our regularly scheduled meeting, I would rather wait until then, early June, to bring that back so I can have time to make the changes and get it in the packet.
And that's totally doable. That would be totally fine.
Okay.
That's a good point. It's one of the one of our struggles with a weekly newspaper schedule, where we can only put, you know, get things in the paper at a certain time.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Linehan. I would ask again, Ms. Davis, is there anything else that we should be discussing? Are we good?
I think I have good direction tonight, and I appreciate all of your input and your help through this process. So thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I can speak for the rest of the planning commissioners. And so at this point in time, I would entertain a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Commissioner Olson will make a motion to adjourn this meeting.
All right. Do I hear, I have a second?
Commissioner Perez, I second that.
Thank you, Commissioner Perez. It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor signify yes.
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 All those opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, commissioners. Thank you, council people. Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Davis, Blue Line, it was a great meeting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
Good night.
Have a good evening.